if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension. I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Tom.
Thank you for joining us. This week we're discussing two more episodes of Sliders. This week it is The Weaker Sex and Eggheads. So getting into our first episode this week, The Weaker Sex, written by Dawn Preswitch. God, some people have just ridiculous names on this show. Dawn Preswitch and Nicole Yorkin, directed by Vern Gillum. This originally aired May 3rd of 1995.
Hold it.
Allow me, madam. It would be my pleasure to press your button.
Five.
Oh, you're going to the fifth floor, too. There you are. Chivalry is not dead.
How lucky for us.
Oh, a woman with a dry sense of humor. How delightful.
Man who presses buttons, how interesting.
Well, there's far more to me than a sense of gallantry, madam, as you yourself could find out over a fine candlelit dinner.
Now, that's very tempting, but you know, I don't like large men or men with beards or phony English accents. Other than that, you might have had a chance.
Good morning, Miss Ross.
Good morning.
Congratulations, Professor. Good morning. Just hit on the mayor.
Our sliders land in a world where it becomes very obvious very quickly that they aren't home. Hillary Clinton is the president, the Pope is Jane Pauley, and corporations and Congress are run almost entirely by women. The sliders, having just a bit of pocket change left, decide to find jobs rather than sleep out on the street. Quinn finds he's only qualified for nanny positions and nude models, while Remy tries his hand in the street singing for tips. Luckily, Wade is able to secure a job in the mayor's office, supplying them with food and a room for them to stay on this world. The guys accompany Wade to the mayor's office the next day, hoping to get jobs there themselves, when Arturo unknowingly hits on the mayor and is shot down promptly. Quinn is hired almost immediately, seemingly based on his looks, as he is going to be their receptionist rather than a computer analyst. As Arturo complains about the problems of women being in control here, a journalist in the mayor's waiting room takes notice and talks to Arturo. Meanwhile, Remy continues his street singing and is approached by a woman, promising him champagne dreams and caviar wishes, but in reality, she is just a player who has a habit of picking up and using men, much in the same way many men have done on Earth Prime again and again to women, basically just adding guys to her notches on her belt. Eventually, after a confrontation with the woman's ex-boyfriend, Remy leaves and returns to the group. The professor's campaign for mayor has gained serious ground despite coming under death threats and ridicule. Arturo wants to drop out of the race, but to do so would set back men's rights so far that it's possible another man would not try to stand up for themselves. He decides to cry during a debate, but this only garners him more support due to the sympathy and sensitivity factor. As the race comes to a close, the professor is informed he has lost, but has done a lot to help the men's cause. The group slides out, but immediately after, it is revealed that, in fact, Arturo won the race and is now the mayor-elect. Unfortunately, Arturo is resigned to being Wade's slave on the next world, a result of a bet the two placed before sliding.
She didn't even call me.
Are you going to call her?
And give her the satisfaction? I'm not going to play those kind of mind games.
Coffee.
No, thanks. I don't drink coffee.
Very funny.
She's asking you to brew some. You need some help?
It's okay. I got it.
So did you hear? Maximilian Arturo is at the 20%.
Pathetic. Why is it pathetic? Come on, a man in political office? Next you'd be telling me men should fly airplanes.
Who says they can't?
Men have too much testosterone. Look at women, they only cycle once a month. Men cycle every 20 minutes. As many mood swings as I go through in an afternoon, I wouldn't want to be in charge of anything.
Boys, 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 we are trying to run a political campaign here. Every call is a potential vote. Come on.
All right. So a little bit of trivia on this episode. Looks like we've got a fair bit here.
Yes, there is a fair bit. Originally, the woman that Remy meets, Serena, approaches all of the group on the street and gives them her card and says, you know, I'm friends with the mayor. So go see the mayor and she'll get you hooked up with jobs. So rather than just, you know, hitting on Remy, she's saying, yeah, here you go. Go see the mayor. She'll take care of you. And in the meantime, Remy, you come with me, you know? So it's similar to the, you know, the way it was shot, but just a little extra in there. So now we find out why, you know, how Wade was able to find out they were even hiring at the mayor's office. There were some more lines between Serena and Remy, but nothing majorly big. Some of the scenes were extended a tiny bit, but nothing, you know, shattering to the story, basically. There were also some more fights between Quinn and Wade in this episode. It's revealed that Wade actually did give the mayor info about Arturo for the commercial, you know, all the slander that was going into the commercial. And Quinn gets angry about it, and he decides to give Arturo info about the mayor, because in this particular deleted scene, Quinn was asked to pick up the mayor's, I think it was personal dry cleaning or shoes or something at a store, like a personal errand, basically, on the city's time. So he gave Arturo that information to use, I think it was in the debate. So there was a little bit of back and forth between Quinn and Wade, you know, about, you know, this is our friend, we should be helping him, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
The debate scene that we saw was actually, there was two parts to it in the original script. There's going to be an earlier one and then a later one. Just some more issues that they were talking about back and forth. And then it was in the later one where he would actually do the crying, you know, the upset part. And that even, the crying that he did in the original script was even more whiny and more over the top than what we got in the final script, which is probably good that they cut it out, because it was really, like, when I was reading, I was like, well, that's a little bit much. You know, he's like, Arturo's going on about how his therapist told him just to stand strong and you can do this. You can do this, man. So yeah, it's good that they cut that out, because it is a little bit much. You know, I think they nailed it right in the final version. So yeah, a little bit more with the debate scene. So there were the two guys who were helping Arturo out in the campaign. One was Howie. He was the main guy that he talked to first. And then there was a second guy. I think his name was Bill. Don't quote me on that, though. So it turns out that in the original version, Bill's wife was the one who was actually threatening Arturo with the brick through the window, with the threatening phone calls and all that. His wife was doing all of that. And that was going to be revealed because the female FBI agent from the hippie world, that character, that FBI agent, the female one, was going to show up again and investigate who was doing this to Arturo. And it comes out that Bill's wife was the one who was doing all that. So that was a neat callback, I thought, to bring back that character again. Originally, Howie, instead of being a journalist working for GQ, I think it was, he was actually going to be working in the mayor's office, just like Quinn was working in the mayor's office as a receptionist. Howie was going to work there too. And then eventually he was going to quit, you know, very dramatically. Something happened where the mayor asks him to do something he feels, you know, demeaned, like the guys do on this world. And he was going to quit quite dramatically. And that's when he starts to work on getting Arturo to run for mayor. And then the last thing that was a little different was the ending. Rather than seeing the scene of Quinn and Wade and Remy hanging out, and then, you know, she calls for, boy, I need a drink, it was going to start off with a close-up of Arturo contemplating all that he's learned from, you know, the feminist-controlled world. And you know, he sounds like he's made a profound, what do you call it? He had a profound moment, you know, thinking about all that he's thought about and all that's happened. And then all of a sudden Wade snaps her fingers and says, I need a drink, boy, you know. So same type of thing, but a little bit more introspective on Arturo at the end of the episode originally.
Yeah, I think they played it right, though, that
yeah.
He would remain a bit arrogant.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, the way they had it originally, like I said, he's contemplating, like, you know, I've learned a lot in this world. It's, you know, changed my mind about things. So, yeah, no, they did it. The changes are definitely, you know, were well done. Definitely needed.
That's great, Cuba. Oh.
Boy. Boy, I need a refill, please. Thank you.
How long till we next slide?
9 days, 5 hours, and 32 minutes.
Tell me the truth. Did you vote for him? Me either.
All right, so getting into our discussion of the weaker sex. Here at the beginning, they slide in and they immediately note that they've got 6.5 weeks between slides. So this is the longest one yet.
Mm-hmm. And you need that too, because the whole mayor race, you got to have time to build up.
Yeah, so 6.5 weeks on a female superiority world, I guess
right.
You could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they give plenty of time for the story to play out with Arturo running for mayor. So I think that's an interesting point in that it's not always just, you know, a few days or a week or a few mm-hmm. hours even. It can be as long as like 6.5 weeks.
Right. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a cool beginning. But yeah, we do get into this whole thing about how women are, like I said, I guess the like superior race. They're the ones who are on top and not men. And it hits on major points like equality in the workplace and hitting those predominantly male occupations like higher government and the Catholic Church. So what do you reckon?
Well, yeah, I thought it was interesting because they said it happened a couple hundred years ago. They decided they were tired of the men and the fighting and everything. So they just took a vote and took over. Is that what they said?
I'm gonna remember. Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of this, but it doesn't seem like, I don't know. It's like in a world where women are completely in power like that, it seems like it's still pretty much like our world, you know? Like not much has really, really changed except the women are in power. The women wear suits, but you don't see the men wearing dresses.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just switched their roles up. I read this on some, I forget if it was on the forums or the one of the sites, about, you know, if women are in all these positions of power, they're probably architects and things like that, but the buildings are still looking the same. They're designed as if they were designed as they originally were by men and everything. So the only thing that really changes is that women are in power and men are not, but I don't know. It's still basically our world. Just one little tiny change. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And I do think they go a little over the top with it as
yeah.
well. It seems like it's more of a 50s mentality.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Men in the workplace. And yeah, it comes to the forefront when Quinn is being interviewed for the job and he's being sized up like a piece of meat, as he puts it.
Right.
And yeah, that's like a male thing to do. Any chauvinist man will size up a woman like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like more of a 50s mentality. Like, I'm a relatively young guy, so I'm not sure exactly if it was like this still in the 90s. I think women had a lot more power by the 90s.
Right. And I mean, in the 90s, I was in high school / college, and I don't really remember like noticing anything like that much. Like, I just wasn't paying attention to that. I was, you know, into comic books and movies and stuff. You know, I wasn't really noticing, you know, how women were treated. And so I couldn't comment firsthand, you know, about that either.
But yeah, I just thought that sexism in the workplace like that was something that was around in the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, she, like, because she's telling him, like, what he needs to wear and.
Right.
And sizes him up and down and says, tell Wade she's got great taste. I mean, like, in the 90s, I think that would be considered discrimination.
Yeah. And, you know, I like, just thinking about it now, Mad Men. I don't know if you've seen Mad Men at all. This attitude fits perfectly with Mad Men. Like, they're telling the girls how to dress as secretaries and, you know, why don't you, you know, wear something a little tighter, this and that. You know, it's a, it definitely doesn't seem like a 90s type attitude. Definitely a little bit older, 50s or 60s, like you said.
So they do go overboard, but at the same time, it's a parallel universe, so you can understand where they're going with it. They really want to push this factor for the episode. And it works. I think it fits well for the story they're trying to tell here. But, you know, aside from that, Remy, he puts his singing talents to work and he's out on the street and he's getting some money and he gets picked up by a chauvinist woman, which I also think is a really good tie-in for the themes of the episode. It's an old story about the man who picks up the beautiful woman and tells her that he's a record producer and I can get you somewhere, baby, if you just do something for me. So having that role reversed in this episode, I thought was really good. And it led to some great comedic moments.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like when he runs into the boyfriend or the ex-boyfriend and he's just crying like, telling the story about how, I'm working through my issues with mom and why do I do this to myself?
Exactly. And when he says, don't let her hurt you, boyfriend. I'm like, that's great. That's good.
Yeah. So we're still on these like side tangent stories for Remy. And he's going to come to the forefront a couple episodes from now. Like in our next episode, we're going to be talking about him in the forefront of an episode, which is good. But it's like we were talking about when it comes to Remy. We had those impressions from 1995 when this was airing. And a lot of people couldn't understand why he was here. And I could really see why, because he is sort of delegated to a secondary character who's getting his own individual stories.
Right. Yeah, they haven't done a whole lot with him yet, you know, so it's understandable. They're like, well, I don't see why he's even on the show. He's not doing much. He doesn't really help that much.
Yeah, and he is quite the comic relief as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And a player. Because that's the other good thing is that he's loving it. Just this strong woman who's picked him up. He didn't really have to do anything to get laid, as it were.
Exactly. But then, you know, like it does turn around when he realizes, you know, she doesn't really care about his music, really, to her. You know, it's like how some people treat, you know, how some men treat their women. Oh, that's a nice little hobby you're doing there, but it's not going to make, you know, not really anything, you know. So he doesn't like being treated like that. Eventually he's like, oh, I see how this is.
Yeah, and he has a great line when he realizes she has to go to a work dinner and he says, baby, I made beef stroganoff. And you could spend some time at home once in a while.
Oh. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, because, yeah, you think about it, they're there for 6.5 weeks. So he's been there for some time. It's not just like a day or two.
Yeah. But, you know, of course, being a female empowered world, Wade is the one who sort of steps up. She gets the big job in the mayor's office. And she's totally for it as well. Yeah, she loves this idea. And this is juxtaposed against the professor, who, of course, thinks it's ridiculous that women are in charge and he can't be a professor.
Right.
And that leads to the whole thing about the professor wanting to run for mayor. So what did you think of this aspect of the episode?
Well, I thought that was, I mean, that fits perfect. You know, he's the perfect guy to run for this. You know, I thought it was great. I thought it was a neat idea. He has some great comical moments himself, you know, when she's chasing after the guy with the baby. He's like, sir, I need to kiss your baby. It's just, I crack up every time I think about that, because it's just funny to see him, you know, bolting after this guy and his baby. So yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was a neat idea. What I was thinking about Wade was, which, you know, it's like, yeah, she doesn't get really, I mean, she gets involved by getting a job, but she doesn't want to shake up this world at all. You know, she says that a couple times, like, you know, let's not impress too much upon this world. I mean, what's wrong with it? You know, women are in power, because she's felt devalued through her life as well, you know, on her home world, because it's the opposite. But the thing is with this, Wade doesn't really recognize, or she doesn't come out and say it, that the way the men are being treated is really wrong. Just like the way women are treated the opposite way would be wrong. She, for some reason, it's not addressed, which I understand it's an hour show, so they can't address everything. But, you know, it'd be nice if there was some lines in there about how she recognizes that, you know what? You're right. The way my friends, the way my male friends are being treated is wrong. This is not right. We may have less, you know, wars or fights and things like that, less crime, but my friends are being treated badly. They're treated not as equals, you know, because the men are definitely not treated as equals here. You know, they are definitely second-class citizens compared to the women. So I thought it would have been nice if Wade could have spoke to that at some point, being the woman in the group. You know, saying this isn't right. You know, you're right. We should fight for equality, not just not one sex over the other, basically.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, it is really pushed over the top to an extreme to back in the 50s when it was like, oh, women can't have like higher ranking jobs and so on and so forth. When it comes to the what they tackle in this episode about, you know, things like higher government and things like that, that you can understand. In the 90s, not a lot of women in higher government. These days, there's plenty of women. And of course, we have the mentality now of women are just as good as men when it comes to any job.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, like women are better than men or men are better than women. It's who's the right person, you know, to do the job. You know,
exactly.
It shouldn't matter, you know, sex or color or, you know, anything. So, yeah, it's who can do the job right is what, you know, I was thinking that would be a nice thing to have had in the episode, something like that to push that thought forward.
Yeah, we get all that information about how men aren't architects or pilots and things like that. So you just like it is that extreme.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the thing that I was thinking about was I thought it was great, like, because Arturo was ready to stay. If he had won, I think he would have stayed. You know, this would have been his home then from now on. And when he loses, it's like, all right, well, now we can go. Everything's fine. But then, you know, you find out that he won. So excellent. He won. You know, go. Men's rights. People want, you know, a male mayor here in this in San Francisco. But he ends up sliding to the world there. This guy just won and he disappears. He's done. He's out of it. Where'd he go? No one knows. So I don't know if he's really helped. I mean, I know he's helped men's rights because he's raised awareness of men's rights and how they're being treated. But by him leaving, does that show cowardice? Does that show, I mean, we know it's not cowardice, but to the world, does that show, oh, look at this. He won, but, you know, as a man, he can't handle this awesome power, this awesome responsibility of being mayor because he's just disappeared. We can't find him. I'm wondering, will that affect that world negatively since he did have to leave?
Yeah, exactly. What are the political repercussions of him disappearing?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was also having bomb threats against him too. So, you know, could they also suspect that maybe someone kidnapped him, murdered him or something?
Yes, exactly.
Got rid of him because he won?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just, it is. It's going back to, you know, what we've said over the last few episodes. If you could come back to this world in like 5 years, what's it going to be like?
Exactly. That would be, I wish they had found a way to do that somehow, you know, over the course of the series. That would have been neat to see. Okay, so the last thing that that we had, you know, coming off last episode where it was the end of the world, Quinn and Wade share a moment. We have this episode here, and there's a little tiny bit of Quaid in this episode. Just a little bit, you know? Again, we know where it's going. It's not going anywhere. But there was a scene there. It was very quick. And I never noticed it before, again, until I started looking at sliders in a whole new way, where I think Wade comes out of the shower or something, and she's sitting on the bed with Quinn, and Quinn was like drying her hair with a towel or something around her. And I was like, well, that's interesting, because I don't dry my friend's hair. You know, like I don't go over to their house and they get out of the shower and I'm like, oh, come here, let me rub your hair, you know, with this towel. But they were doing it. And that's like a very couple thing to do.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, it's in there, And, you know, again, it doesn't, this is not something that shows up very often, but I'm just thinking, oh, there's another little Quaid moment for y'all.
Yeah, and they don't like make a big deal of it.
No,
it's just
they don't.
Something they're doing in a scene while right. they're talking to Arturo about possibly running for mayor. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's a great little just moment
mm-hmm.
to sort of push that relationship thing forward. You know, overall, it was an all right episode. It's actually, I can't say there's a lot of memorable stuff about it.
Right.
It's a little give or take for me on this episode.
Yeah, it's not a terrible episode, not the greatest episode. It's, I mean, it was fun. The role reversal was fun. And it does have some of those cool, those funny comical moments. Like I said, the professor just, I must kiss your baby. I love that.
And now it's time for another episode of Tech Talk with Quinn Mallory.
I'm getting awfully tired of the landing on my butt. Can't you do something about that?
Oh, you know I can't. I think you asked just to annoy me a little.
Actually, I asked to annoy you a lot.
This has been another episode of Tech Talk with Quinn Mallory.
All right, so getting into our second episode today, the episode is Eggheads, written by Scott Smith Miller with story by Jacob Epstein and Scott Smith Miller, directed by Timothy Bond. This originally aired April 26th of 1995.
Hell of a reception. Reminds me of the first time I played the Apollo. Little Rembrandt and the Shandells back in the early 70s.
Are you guys all right?
They act like I'm some kind of academic superstar.
Well, we evidently have arrived on a world where they regard intellectual achievement with the same sort of adulation that we confer on movie stars or sports heroes. Rather sensible, if you ask me.
Did you hear what they were calling you? You're the Sliders.
What?
Mr. All-World Quinn Mallory and Professor Arturo. You were supposed to have slid a couple of months ago.
They actually referred to us as the Sliders?
Yes.
Guys, you know what this means? If we're Sliders, my double's got to have built a sliding machine. Driver, 4159 Blue Jay Way. And hurry.
Your house.
My house. If the system's here, we won't have to reconfigure the timer. We can auto-set the system. We're going home!
Our sliders land in a dimension where academic achievement is akin to celebrity status. With signs proclaiming longer library hours, people are walking around with boomboxes blasting classical music, and billboards reveal Einstein to be a spokesmodel for Gap khakis, and Quinn's double here is a model for Nike with the slogan, Just Think It. Quinn and the professor are mobbed by some people asking for autographs, while one woman explains to a confused Wade and Remy that it's great to see the sliders back. With the news that their doubles apparently slid a few months ago, the group heads to Quinn's home only to find no sliding equipment of any sort and his house in foreclosure, with his mom long since being forced out of it. The group decides that the professor and Quinn should pose as their doubles in an attempt to find the sliding equipment, since it is their best chance at getting home. The group search Arturo's office for files on sliding, finding nothing. Arturo calls his home phone and is shocked to hear the voice of his late wife, Christina, answer. In his home dimension, Arturo lost her to a brain aneurysm at a very young age. Here in this dimension, she is alive, but suing Arturo for divorce, who apparently is a scoundrel, cleaning out their bank account and keeping himself busy with various co-eds. Meanwhile, Quinn attempts to learn how to play Mind Game, a combination of basketball, Othello, and Family Feud-style gameplay, answering scientific questions while moving a ball around a grid, attempting to capture as many squares as possible. The coach is overjoyed to have Quinn back, while Quinn's teammate, Wilson, his replacement when he went away, is not happy and makes a phone call telling someone that Quinn has returned. Upon returning home, Quinn is met by a group of angry-looking mobsters explaining that Quinn skipped out on $1 million in gambling debts. They then tell Quinn to throw the match against MIT or he'll end up dead. Arturo attempts to reconcile with his wife, and while first she doesn't believe his goodwill, she later agrees to meet again and this time is convinced of his desire to fix things. He explains he does need to go away, but he will be back. Arturo Prime records a video message to Scoundrel Arturo from this dimension, explaining that the Scoundrel needs to give it a chance with Christina because she is the great love of his life, whether he knows it or not. Arturo Prime leaves instructions to the secretary to show him this tape immediately on his return. Quinn decides to tell the coach he quits, but the coach talks to him about how much he's tried to help Quinn over the years, cover for him when he came in drunk or high, and that he had hopes that Quinn would be one of the great players of the game like Sagan and Hawkins. Quinn leaves undecided but is approached by the FBI, who plan to arrest him for his betting and point shaving, until Quinn convinces them that he can give them the members of the mob instead, a much bigger career-making case than he is. During the mind game match, Quinn plays to win before taking himself out of the game, warning the coach that Wilson is going to throw the game. Quinn leaves to Slide, with the mob following behind, determined to kill him for not throwing the game. The mob corners the Sliders on the roof while the FBI corner the mob, and our intrepid quartet activate the vortex and slide out, leaving behind befuddled FBI agents and mobsters.
Ah, home sweet home.
Look, you're on the Wheaties box.
Breakfast of geniuses. If you got all these endorsements, how come you're so broke?
Well, how's he supposed to know he's not him?
Well, maybe I'm missing something. I don't know.
How come you're always asking stupid questions?
Okay, so a little bit of trivia on this episode.
All right, so originally, at the start of the episode, there was going to be a reference to Arturo being Wade's butler from the last episode. And obviously, since they do these things out of order, that part was cut. Originally, Arturo's wife had a different name. I think it was Evelyn. And she didn't actually die in the original script. She cheated on Arturo with a friend of his. So you could kind of see why they got rid of that, because it doesn't leave much for sympathy if she just cheats on him. You know what I'm saying?
A lot more sympathetic the way they ended up doing it.
Exactly. All right, so now the coach originally was going to have a heart attack due to stress from the game, and Quinn visits, and the speech is similar to the one that's shown with the FBI appearing. The original ending would have Arturo's secretary giving the tape to his wife, explaining that she needed to see it. So instead of just ending the way they did, there's going to be an extra little stinger scene at the end where the secretary says, you know what, you need to see this, and gives it to Arturo's wife so she can see, oh yeah, you know what, he actually is very, very nice, an honest guy. So it works out much better in this version of the scene.
You know, I think that would have made Christina distrust her Arturo more if she had seen the tape, because I guess she knows that the man she was talking to is not her husband.
Exactly. Nothing too major, just, you know, little things that they put in there. And again, if you want to see these, if you want to actually read the excerpts from the script, you can go to dimensionsofcontinuity.com under their Lost and Found section. You could find the snippets of the script.
It's the national semifinals of Mind Game. Today's showdown between the eggheads of the University of California and the Crimson of Harvard is brought to you by Wheaties, the breakfast of geniuses, and Nike, just think it. And now, from the Mind Field at Berkeley, here are Ron Pitts and Tom Jackson.
A big test today for Cal, Tom. The first game since the return of everybody's All-American, Quinn Mallory.
Yeah, but I don't think Mallory will have much of an impact. Harvard knows that he likes to go for those vital outside squares. Harvard tags really well. If he's lost a little bit of what he had due to the long layoff, they won't let him get to the outside.
Interesting. In just a few seconds, we're going to see what the strategy is against him. Remember, the winner of this game goes on to meet MIT in the finals.
All right, so getting into our discussion of eggheads, I have to start here at the beginning, because there are some terrible extras doing some acting in this opening scene. The random little boy, the random woman.
Right.
And, of course, the silent taxi driver.
Where's Pavel?
He sits there doing nothing while the Sliders have a conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, we want Pavel back, you know? He would have had something to say, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But, I know, those extras were terrible, weren't they?
A little bit of overacting, yes, for sure.
Yeah. And that, yeah, that woman. Where have you been, woman? That's Quinn Mallory.
Yeah, you can forgive the boy, but the girl, oh my God. Quinn Mallory and Maxie.
Just terrible. Yeah, you know, they slide into a world where celebrity is academic. You know, we don't place celebrity on actors or singers in this world. We place it on university lecturers and people like Stephen Hawking, I guess. And that is all tied together through this mind game as well. So this is an interesting concept.
Yeah, I loved this concept. When I first saw this episode, when did it air? It was 95. So yeah, I was in college at this point and I knew that I was going to be a teacher. That was my goal. So when this episode comes out, it's like, yeah, this is the way it should be. You know, like you should be treating, you know, your educators, you know, like celebrities. Why not? And I've thought this, I don't know if I had this thought before this episode or if this episode is the one that sort of, you know, cemented that in my head, you know, that why not? Like imagine the world, you know, and I know it's different in different countries. I know that like, you know, Japan and China have great education systems, or they're very supportive and whatnot. And they're like, they're leaders in like math and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, at least here in America, it's not always that way, you know, especially in where I live in my home state. It's, you know, we're like one of the lowest for support for public education. And I've always thought, you know, wouldn't it be great, you know, if we were treated like celebrities, and not necessarily just because, oh, it'd be cool to be popular, but just to have that type of value, like, you know, like this here is a good teacher. He's worth this much and we're going to pay him this much because of what he does, because of what he knows and, you know, everything about him. And then another school would say, you know what? We want that teacher here. We're going to, you know, I'll tell you what, we're going to pay you this much for that, you know, or we'll trade you this teacher for that teacher, you know, just like they do on sports teams. I thought this would be excellent. Imagine like teachers and professors, you know, principals having like trading cards with stats on the back for, you know, subjects taught or hours logged in the classroom. I mean, that would be a dream come true right there. Let me tell you, as a teacher myself.
Yeah, it's, you know, just like the previous episode, it is pushed to the extreme.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's very topical. It is still something that's going on today about, you know, how much teachers are being paid for work they do. The idea that, you know, by having a better school system, you're actually investing in your country's future.
Yes.
And why aren't teachers paid more?
Exactly. Exactly. It's something I've thought about. And I'm just like, this would be a cool, like, I would love to go visit this world. You know, I think that would be awesome. I know it's just, you know, it is to the extreme, but it's like, it's a nice idea because who in the world, you know, has not been touched by a teacher in some way, not like in a bad way, but I mean, you know, everyone pretty much goes to school, you know, you've been affected by a teacher. Affected is a better word. You know, everyone's been affected by a teacher somehow, you know, whether it's, you know, elementary, junior high, high school, college, you know, grad school, whatever, you've had something with a teacher that you've been affected by. Everyone in the world, even like celebrities, sports stars, the people that we do place on these high pedestals in our world, they've had teachers. And why not give these teachers some due? Like, you know, look at this person that you idolize as this movie star. He might not have been there without this particular group of teachers. You know, it's like the seed that's sort of, well, not, well, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I've thought about this a lot over the years.
And I love throughout the episode all the advertisements that come up. You know, the Wheaties box, Nike. That's Nike with two Ks because we need to get around intellectual property rights.
Yeah. Exactly. And the Wheaties was, I think, two E's, I think, instead of an EA.
Yeah. And, of course, when they're in Arturo's office as well, he's got the big poster of Arturo in Vegas.
Right.
Arturo lectures.
I know. It's awesome. It's awesome.
So, yeah, so it is like, it's a well-rounded world. Like, they drop in this, all this side information and it sort of just develops the world better. Gap khakis again.
Right. Like
that was hilarious.
Yep.
At the beginning as well, they also drop this thing about how they're sliders. Like, everybody knows that they're the sliders who went on a slide and they're back. So they're thinking, hey, if the sliding equipment's here, we can go home. Like, exactly. This is a huge deal for the series in that they think they can get home.
Yep.
you know, as the episode develops and they get into Mind Game and the professor being sued for divorce, I think this is a great way to sort of develop that, sort of build that false hope and then tear it away because their alternates on this world are just despicable people.
Exactly, exactly. And I thought about, they must have been, I mean, they must have been visited by perhaps another slider, like maybe another, you know, group of sliders came through and that's where they got the idea. Or do you think that they were just coming up with sliding on their own? Because I think my idea is that you know, a group of sliders discovered this world and gave, you know, scoundrel Arturo and despicable Quinn kind of an idea to get out. Like, this is how they can, like, you know, cover their exit from the world.
And maybe that alt Quinn from the pilot episode.
Right, showed up. Exactly, exactly.
So, yeah, so it's definitely an interesting idea that, you know, maybe because of the accident he had with our Quinn, in not being able to tell him about not activating the vortex too early.
Right.
Then maybe he learned something. So he showed up and he, you know, maybe talked to them about it and didn't actually give them the information they needed to build it.
Right.
So, yeah, like you said, they could have taken this idea and just sort of grandized it in order to get away.
Right. Because there's no indication that they were even working on sliding at all, you know?
Exactly.
There's no equipment. There's no, you know, chalkboard with formulas on it. And he was going a whole different direction in this world.
So we get into Mind Game and we introduce the mob. They are, I guess, because Quinn had racked up a whole bunch of gambling debt and they started to use that against him so they could bet in Mind Game and win, point shaving, all that stuff. I think this is maybe a point of the episode that disappointed me a little bit, because when you see popular sports, things like football, they are huge, big stadium games.
Mm-hmm.
And Mind Game just seems so small in comparison.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, it does seem kind of a small local type thing.
Exactly. No grandstands, nothing like that. Like, a lot of people coming out to see it. And I, you know, I understand that a sci-fi show is, you know, not necessarily gets huge budgets. So maybe they can't do a full arena or something. They can't get a full arena. So they've got to work around the constraints of their budget. But yeah, it didn't seem like it would be a huge deal. It's just something that's played on a tiny little court in a studio somewhere.
Right. Like the mob would, like, how much could the mob actually get? Like, how much could they be winning, you know, in this small little area? You know what I'm, that, yeah, I understand.
Yeah. Are they making money from ticket sales or anything like that? Like, right. That's why football's so big.
Right.
They've got a constant revenue coming through.
Right. Yep. So the one thing I noticed, which I, like, again, never noticed before, when the sliders are running out of the Mind Game arena, it's one of those typical chase scenes that you see in movies and TV shows where they're running away and they're being chased and suddenly there's, like, obstacles everywhere. You know, there's, like, a bookshelf that is just standing there. Then there's a giant Einstein head that people are moving that they have to maneuver around. It was kind of comical to me. I was waiting to see, like, a fruit cart, you know, go by, waiting for them to knock it over or something. It was just kind of like a little cliche chase scene. Which I was like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah. I also noticed that it went on a bit long.
Yeah.
Like, there must have been about four individual shots of them running up a stairwell.
Right.
Like, it's like this one, and then they turn around, and they go up the next one, and then the next one. And then I'm like, how many shots of them running up a stairwell are we going to get?
And it's like times like that that you think, well, why didn't they just cut that out and put in one of the original deleted parts? You know, it's like, because, yeah, the shot of the stairwell over and over again, we don't really need. We get the idea. They're going up the stairs.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I also love that Arturo's not actually in that scene. He's waiting on the roof.
Right.
It's as if John Rhys-Davies was like, I'm not running up any damn stairs. How much, just have my character already be on the roof.
Exactly. And that makes sense because he wasn't there with him. He was off, you know, recording the video, talking with his, you know, his wife and everything. So it makes sense. It makes sense. Now, the other thing that I thought about was Scoundrel Arturo. He exists on this world somewhere. He didn't slide, obviously. If he comes back home and he gets Arturo Prime's message, okay, he sees the videotape, Is he going to actually take that to heart? Is he going to like look at that and say, you know what? You're right, Arturo Prime. This woman, Christina, is my soulmate. She is the love of my life. Because, yeah, he's the same person, but obviously he's not the same person. You know, like he thinks differently. If he's, you know, messing around with, you know, his co-ed students and things like that, I don't know if like that message is going to give him, you know, much reason to say, oh, yes, I love this woman. I will stay married to her and be faithful to her.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It does seem that, yeah, he may not even be coming back.
Right, right.
As well. As far as we understood, he cleaned out the joint bank account and took off to wherever with one of his co-eds.
Right.
What is it that our Arturo thinks he's going to come back for?
Right. It's like we're given, he's given Christina like false hope, you know, because unless scoundrel Arturo has like a big change of heart, he still doesn't want to be with her, you know? So like, and she's believing our Arturo. So at least, you know, if they have that scene in there where she sees the video, you know, like one of the deleted scenes, she gets the idea that maybe it's not her Arturo that was speaking to her. So it gives her some hope at least that way.
At the same time, it does give us a bit of backstory on Arturo as well.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Aside from knowing that he's professor of cosmology and ontology at the University of California.
Right.
We don't know that much about him.
No.
You know, you could assume that he wasn't married. He wasn't a married man. He hadn't left anybody behind when they slid.
Mm-hmm.
So getting this little bit of backstory that he was indeed married, probably at some point in his early 20s, and his wife passed away. So that's why he's not married now. Yeah, I guess he just focused on his career or something. So it is a good little bit of backstory for him. I don't think it's ever going to come up again.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, because when I read these deleted scenes, you know, and stuff like that, and sometimes I get things mixed up. Didn't they say that he also had a son that he neglected?
I don't remember.
I don't remember it either, but it's for some reason I remember them saying something. It was either in the deleted scenes, but see, if it was in the deleted scenes, I would have put it in there. But I could have sworn they said something about a son back home that he neglected. Another little bit of the backstory. I could be wrong, but I thought I remember that now. And I don't know why I didn't put it down here in the notes. But yeah, I remember something about that.
At the same time, it's not really a big deal because it's not something we're going to get into.
Right, exactly. Again, if they could have, you know, had things, you know, in order the way they wanted to, they could have gotten into that.
Overall, I thought it was a pretty good episode.
Yeah. No, this is one of my favorite episodes just because of the education type of story, you know, like celebrating the educators, you know, putting them up on the pedestal. I like that.
Yo, Holmes, what up?
What up with you?
What we gonna say? What we gonna do? Where we gonna go? What we gonna see?
We're going to the library. I'm moving down the aisle with my homies in tow. We're grooving in the home of the librarian.
Yo!
She checks us out from behind thick glasses. We walk right past and we wiggle our asses. Hemingway, Lawrence, Chekhov, and Miller. Fitzgerald was a freak. Mailer is a killer.
Quiet, please! Quiet, please!
The silence is golden. To books I am beholden. I know I'm bad because of the knowledge that I'm holding. And I give you one warning. There will be no repeats. Get out of my face while I'm reading my keys.
All right, so getting into messages from Earth Prime, I see you've been looking at the little time capsule forum again.
Yeah, and so I did find some stuff related more to the actual episodes this time. It's still kind of difficult to find because there's so many posts and they're not always talking about the episode that just aired. So you sort of got to look at a large set of dates in order to get all the discussions. Mm-hmm. So a couple things I saw for starting with Eggheads in this world, alternate history isn't important. In all the other episodes so far, there's been something in history that was different, that changed, that affected the world, and that's why it's different when the sliders land there. But in this world, we don't get any alternate history, but instead there's an alternate attitude where education is just celebrated. They don't explain why, you know, that they don't say that there was a special moment in the past that caused people to focus on education. They just do, you know, they focus on education. And people were talking about how that gives great possibilities for other worlds because you don't have to just have alternate history, you could have alternate attitudes, and that opens up, you know, other numerous storylines that you could do. They were also talking about Mind Game, which actually is a pretty neat game. And like, I was thinking about it too. It's not that hard to understand. You know, if you know how to play, like Quinn said, Go or Othello, if you know how to play that, that's the basic idea right there. You're just trying to, you know, get as many squares as you can. You know, you connect two points on the grid and then you get all the squares that are in between those two points. The hardest part for me would be answering those scientific questions.
Yeah.
You know, but if you had Mind Game based on, you know, comic books, you know, I think I could do pretty well. I could be a superstar. So yeah, one comment or a couple comments there about that. They say here, see, no, here it is in this Messages from Earth Prime. Someone had commented that this was a good story on Arturo's wife, but they want to know more about the neglected son. So there must have been a line in there when he's talking about how his wife died. There must have been something about his neglected son in that, because back then when this aired, they wouldn't have had access to deleted scenes and, you know, alternate, you know, script takes. So there must have been a line. Must have been a line.
Maybe they had a son on that world.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
Not sure.
So anyway, I thought that was cool. Cause yeah, you know, it would have been neat to learn more about Arturo, develop his character more. I don't know if you noticed. I did when I was watching it because I was like, oh, wait, this looks different. Whenever they cut to the game of Mind Game being played, they shot it on videotape. So it has a different quality than the rest of the episode. The rest of the episode looks kind of cinematic, you know, but when you cut to the Mind Game, they're doing it just like they would do sports on regular TV. It's very videotapey, I guess.
Yeah, a bit more grainy.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So there was some stuff here about the weaker sex as well that people were talking about. Some people said, you know, this episode just feels too PC, too politically correct. You know, it seemed like it was more like built around propaganda, feminist pamphlets or Vogue articles rather than a real explanation or a real exploration of a female dominated world. Like I was saying earlier, it's just kind of, it's the same world. Just they sort of switched roles, you know, they didn't really explore what would the world really be like if it was just, you know, females in power. They didn't talk about how the rest of the world was really. Most of it was just focused, you know, here on the United States. There was some stuff, like we said, about the Pope and all that, but mostly just the United States. Their basic idea was that men are bad, women are good, no woman would ever kill or fight or steal. That seemed to be what they were saying. No wars, no crime, because women are in power. But, you know, there are bad people that are women and bad people that are men and good people that are women, good people that are men, you know? So, you know, it's not gender specific, I guess, is what they were saying.
Well, of course, Arturo gets that bomb threat too, so.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, it was a good point that someone had on there. Someone else said, hey, you know, in this world of female domination, wouldn't Hillary be President Rodham, not President Clinton? Because you would assume that on a female dominated world, men might take the women's name. Rather than vice versa, you know? So I thought, that's a good point. I didn't think about that, you know?
It's like you were saying about the world where the green light means stop. Why are there brake lights red?
Exactly. I thought that was cool. I didn't catch that. But then you wouldn't have had the joke at the beginning about like, oh, hey, President Clinton's talking. And they're like, oh, President Clinton, are we home? Oh, no, we're not.
Too bad the president's married to that loudmouth.
Right, exactly. And then, like I said earlier, the, you know, if there are women architects, wouldn't buildings look different? Obviously, that's something that they couldn't really do on their budget. But someone else, you know, that's where I got the idea from right there, from a post on that forum about the men. You know, wouldn't the men dress in dresses and so on? And then someone else said, you know, Wade didn't really do much this episode, really. She just sort of, you know, she was there. She made some comments, you know, argued against the professor, but she was just kind of underused, they said, for this episode. And that goes with what I said. Like, if she had spoken more about, you know what, my friends are being treated wrong, that would have given her character a little something, you know, developed her a little bit more, I think.
Well, it's true. For an episode that's about female empowerment, the episode's really about Arturo.
Yeah, it is. It would have been nice to have more of an equal, you know, equal bit between him and her. So the last things that I found, these just popped up while I was trying to search for, you know, specific episode specific things. People were talking about how Sliders needs a better time slot because at this point it is airing after 90210, which I don't know. the people who watched 90210, I don't think they're Sliders' true audience. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, it's not the same target audience.
Yeah, they're a little different, I think. Just a little different interests, you know. So they're saying, you know, it should have a better time slot. And they were saying, you know what, they should just get rid of VR5. We talked about VR5, the virtual reality show. They should just get rid of that and put Sliders right after X-Files. So, you know, X-Files and then Sliders. They were commenting on how VR5 is not a great show, but it's okay because it's getting, like, it's doing good in the ratings because it's getting that X-Files audience. You know, they just sort of stick around after X-Files is over and they keep watching. So they were talking about that. They also mentioned, wouldn't it be neat? And I thought this was a cool idea if they could have done a crossover with the X-Files, you know? I thought, that's awesome. That would be great to, you know, to have Scully and Mulder like discover the portal or something like that. And they go through and they, you know, that's a neat idea. Someone's had to have written that fanfic. That's got to be out there.
I know. It's like those, like the Predator comic books where you always see like Predator versus Batman.
Exactly. Or
Predator versus RoboCop.
I'm waiting for Predator versus Archie. I think that's coming up soon. You know? And then the one more thing, which I did not know about, kind of interesting. Doorways was a show by George R.R. Martin, which if I don't know if you follow or not, I don't follow it, but Game of Thrones.
He's
the writer of that.
He's quite big these days.
Yeah. He had a show called Doorways, which I guess just didn't get picked up or it wasn't being produced or something, but it apparently is out there somewhere. And someone was saying, you know what? This kind of Sliders is kind of a ripoff of this George R.R. Martin show, Doorways. Very similar idea, I guess. I didn't get a chance to look much into it, but I'm interested in seeing, you know, what it is. They were saying that it's George R.R. Martin, which is funny. They're saying he doesn't translate well to TV, is what they were saying. You know, a lot of people were saying that. I'm like, really? Because Game of Thrones is like pretty huge right now. So, yeah. You know. He's doing something right.
Yeah, I don't know. Doorways, was it a show about parallel dimensions? I mean, did you look up anything about it?
It was something like that. It was something with, you know, these doorways, I guess, that lead to alternate worlds. I'm not quite sure. I didn't have, like, I just discovered it just maybe like a couple hours ago before I came home. And I was like, oh, look at that. That sounds interesting. But it does have to do with alternate dimensions. And it was originally going to be called Doors, was the original title. But then they feared getting some backlash from the band. And the Doors, like confusion. So they changed it to Doorways. But yeah, I don't really know much about it, but these people, you know, seem convinced that this is just like Sliders or similar enough to Sliders. And I guess it's a real show that was produced. At least maybe a pilot is out there or something.
It sounds like it could be like a Twilight Zone kind of thing where you walk through a door into a different kind of reality.
Someone out there may know. If someone out there knows about Doorways, why don't you write in and let us know about it?
Let us get some of your thoughts into our messages from Earth Prime.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I might have to track that down too.
Mm-hmm.
Have a look around.
Actually, I'm looking right now and the book is on Amazon. So you can get the book. I don't see anything about the TV show yet, but someone had said it was, you know, they could have done that. It was produced or something like that. So
cool.
Oh yeah, here it is right here. It's a TV movie from 1993. A fugitive from a parallel Earth ruled by aliens lands on our Earth in the middle of a freeway causing an accident. And it goes on. You could look it up on IMDb, but yeah, a parallel Earth ruled by aliens. Parallel Earth ruled by Cro-Mags. I'm not saying anything. We'll get there. We'll get there. But anyway, yeah, look it up, Doorways. I don't know how good it is or whatnot, but if you're a fan of Sliders, you probably would like that show as well.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can watch it on Amazon Instant Video for $10. There you go.
Nice.
The wonders of the internet. Okay. Anyway, next week's episodes. What are we doing?
Yes. Okay, so next week, it is the last two episodes of season one, and they are The King Is Back and Luck of the Draw. And believe it or not, these two weren't actually in order. These all were right. Episodes 9 and 10 originally.
So. Go Fox.
Yes. They just mixed up it all in the middle there for season one.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by joining our Facebook group at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and just send it on over to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. It really helps out the show, helps people find us easier. All right. I think it's time to get out of here, Tom. Another great episode.
Yep.
So until next time, I'll just say, I can't handle this kind of responsibility. I cycle every 20 minutes.
We gotta slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.